Sustainability Lens on Radio. Hear an informed, intelligent and provocative discussion of sustainability issues every week. The regular panel of Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher are hosted by Anton Angelo and joined every week by a leading figure in the sustainability scene. Politics, science and controversy on Sustainable Lens on Radio here tonight at 7 o'clock and podcast on www.sustainablelens.org or www.oar.org.nz.
I'm joined by Dr. Olaf Schrod, a postdoc fellow in the University of British Columbia. Welcome.
Hello, welcome.
So, postdoc fellow, tell me about the work you're doing.
I'm member of the Collaborative of Advanced Landscape Planning at UBC, and we are a group of landscape architects in forestry and landscape architecture working on issues around sustainability and lately especially on climate change.
So that's not a Vancouver accent?
Yeah, that's right. I was born in Germany, and later I did a master's in planning studies in Newcastle upon Tyne in England, and my PhD in Switzerland. So before coming here, I spent most time in Switzerland. So yeah, I'm originally from Germany.
So you train as a landscape planner?
Yes. Yeah. My interest is in facilitating sustainable planning or planning for sustainability through computer tools and methods, and developing, applying, and evaluating such tools. That's also my interest in human-computer interaction and why I'm here at the conference.
So how did you get into that? Is that a sort of long-held belief that you got into sustainability?
It's a bit to do with my education. I originally started in surveying, where I had a lot to do with geographic information systems, GIS. But I soon realized that as a surveying engineer, I had only very little influence on the actual decision-making process and how sustainability in a community could be achieved. It was just about implementing engineering solutions. So I changed to planning, and in planning I was lucky to contribute these skills from geographic information systems. But then in planning, I learned much more about the participation part. And one of my professors was Patsy Healy from England. She is a great researcher and practitioner in participatory collaborative planning. And these two influences came together and built my interest in trying to apply computer tools such as GIS and later geovisualization to facilitate participation and sustainability in planning.
So, there's lots of questions in there. So, tell me about the research group you're in. It's a collaborative group, multidisciplinary?
Mostly planners, landscape architects, but we work together with many other disciplines, with forestry, which is really important here in BC.
Right.
And
so is it commercial research? Is it funded?
No, it's academic.
Right.
So we are partly part of the university and doing research funded by research grants, and for example my own research is funded by fellowships.
Right.
So at the moment I am funded through the Pacific Institute for Climate Solutions, PICS,
right,
in Victoria, which is a rather new initiative by the BC government to facilitate research about climate change across multidisciplinaries.
So, tell me about this participatory collaborative planning. Mm-hmm. What does it mean?
It means that we want to involve and engage local stakeholders, local experts, together with experts from academia and the planning professionals, professionals from the development and construction sector and politicians, so involving, engaging all stakeholders and community members in the planning process to come to sustainable solutions that are supported by all community members.
So, playing devil's advocate for a minute, why would I want to do that? Like, what's the benefit of community involvement?
Well, I think there are two main arguments for doing it. First, a bit more on a theoretical level, that it's about democracy, mm-hmm. and even with the democracy system we have, there is a gap on the local level that people need more involvement in local issues.
Yep.
So that's the first reason. And then the second reason is rather hands-on, practical, that solutions that are supported by the local community usually have a higher quality and are better implemented, better supported by the local community. So those tend to be more successful. I can give you an example, if you like. There was a big development project in Hamburg. I also studied in Hamburg for a few years. And the developer actually supported the community process and wanted local people to be involved because they were afraid of being sued and having delays through confrontation with local people. So in that case, the developer even had learned his lessons and tried to engage people early in the process to make it collaborative instead of a confrontation. And it's a win-win situation for everybody, I think.
So you're quite carefully saying collaborative here. You're not talking consultation. Is it something different?
Yes, there is a big difference. There was an American planner, Arnstein, in the early 70s, 1969. She had an article introducing her ladder of participation. And there are different levels of participation, from kind of fake participation, or what you today could say there's greenwashing today, and something to let feel people comfortable, but maybe they're even not really heard. Mm-hmm. And that's not real participation. Participation starts where you have true collaboration and an involvement in decision making.
So, but as a citizen, as a local person, I might not be aware of all of the complications, all of the facts. You're not talking about just sort of handing the decisions over to the local people and saying go with it, are you?
No, and that's where local experts are coming in, university experts. That it's about bringing them together, facilitating this process of exchanging knowledge, mutual learning. And that's also where these computer tools come in, and where I think visualization, geographic information systems can be helpful to support this knowledge exchange.
How does that work if they aren't on the same page? Maybe in a confrontational way, but even more simply, they're just not in the same space. in terms of what they're thinking of.
Which is usually the case. That's usually what you start with. So that really, it takes time, it takes resources, and you need a good facilitator. That's really key, to have a good facilitator who makes sure everybody gets up to speed and everybody is heard. And what I tried, for example, in my PhD thesis, we used these geographic information systems, which are basically computer maps and 3D models, 3D visualizations, to put everybody's knowledge and interest on the map, literally, drawing it on the map. Even without a computer, you can just start, and often that's easier and more accessible to people. You can just start with a map and draw, let people draw things on the map, and then...
So drawing what? Anything that's of interest to them?
Yes. I can give you an example again. In my PhD, I worked in a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve in Switzerland, and we had a conflict in one of the processes between recreation and wildlife habitat. So we had people from the Wildlife Association and foresters on the one hand, and tourism stakeholders on the other hand. And tourism was going to diversify and create new offers like mountain biking and put lots of new trails and mountain bike trails in place. And then foresters were concerned that rare species might be impacted in their habitat, that they're disturbed through these new tourist activities. But when all parties draw their areas of interest into a map during a mapping workshop, the habitats of those was a rare kind of geese, and the dedicated routes for mountain biking, it came out that it was only a rather small area where they were actually in conflict. And then a task force was set up to deal with this specific area. And in the end, this was a successful example where this kind of facilitation, community mapping led to a consensus.
So also in those things, you would expect there to be sort of scientific models, hydrologic models, or forest growth models. How can you get those into that sort of consensus as well?
That's a big challenge but also one of our big themes. I'm writing a paper about this right now, and being in forestry, we have access to these forest models, and for example we used a model on mountain pine beetle susceptibility in a previous workshop now here in BC. It's a big problem in BC. You have huge areas devastated by the mountain pine beetle. It's connected to forest fires. We work with a model of forest fire spread, how forest fires will spread. Another big problem here in BC. But often these mathematical computer models are black boxes that nobody, except maybe even not the researcher himself, that nobody outside really understands. And we try to make them more accessible through visualization.
Of the model or of the results?
Of the results.
Right.
But then, ideally you also have a more participatory modeling process, that the modeler is already meeting with local experts, local people in an early stage, and getting their input, going back, enhancing the model, and going back and forth in an iterative process. And visualizations can help to communicate the model output and there also means to verify the model output. We had several occasions where local people immediately said, this can't be right. There is no snow at this spot because it's in the sunshine, and then modeler realized or had to explain, yeah, typography is not acknowledged or not included in this model, and yeah, we have to improve this. And it's a really good way to test the model.
Yes, and in the cases that you've been talking about, there is multiple legitimate interests. Everybody's right. So, do you find that people can come together with a joint understanding of what's the underlying drivers of the system?
I think they can come together with a common understanding what the drivers are, but not necessarily. You won't necessarily get to a consensus all the time. I think that's one of the key problems or challenges in participation. Sometimes you have conflicts that just cannot be solved for everybody because there are financial interests and political interests, etc. So no matter how good our models and tools and visualizations are, it's still in has to be seen in this political societal context, and some questions can't lead to consensus.
So you're talking about visualizing the results. You're not talking bar charts and things. You're talking about pictures of mountains and forests and things.
Well, that's mainly our interest, landscape visualizations. We work more in rural areas, but now we also work. No, that's not right. We also have projects in urban areas. So, but often we worked on a landscape scale, and it's not only about. I think that's. If I can just make that clear, one of my biggest hypotheses or ideas is, it's not just about visualizing the final result. It's often the case in architecture where you see the final glossy fancy rendering of the building to come, but I try to develop a more interactive iterative process where local stakeholders are early involved in the whole process of modeling and visualization.
Right, and together exploring the different scenarios.
Yes. And thank you, that's a good point. Scenarios is a key method also connected to this whole set of methods.
So you produce what if different decisions are made, or if there's different environmental conditions, this is what it might look like? What sort of scenarios would you be looking at?
Both. An example for different environmental conditions would be the different scenarios from the IPCC reports. For example, we came into several workshops presenting the implications of different IPCC scenarios and what climate change could mean for these communities. And then in this iterative process, the workshop groups discussed mitigation, adaptation measures, and we went back to university and worked on these scenarios, visualized them, went back to the communities, showed again how these mitigation adaptation scenarios could look like, and they gave feedback, oh, we like this, we don't like this, and in the end we came to a set of recommendations.
Okay, so I haven't primed you for this at all. So my city in Dunedin is just embarking on a process to develop its planning structure for the next 20, 50 years, and they're talking about scenarios in terms of climate change and various other things. So if you were to be approached by a city saying, this is our task, What would be the steps? What would we go through?
First, we would start with collecting data, and not only scientific data from university, but also local data. For example, we had this project in Kimberley, BC, and we got a lot of data from the city, and then we try to bring this together with data from the province, from climate research institutes, and build a database. And with this database, we went into the next steps of the participation workshops, working groups with local stakeholders, and as I,
So that would be city councillors, community people, and experts.
Yes. Yeah. We had all these people in our Kimberley workshops. We had members of the city planning staff. We had the local fire chief. We had a community representative. A representative of the local trade board.
So, in these meetings, is the process what's the objective of the day? Is it to come out with the scenarios, or is it to come out with here is our understanding of how it works now? What's the as a research team? What do you need to have happen by the end of the day?
Yeah, I think we have to distinguish between research objectives and policy objectives.
Right.
And ideally, such a transdisciplinary process has both kinds of outcomes. So, as a researcher, I look for, or my research is in evaluation and also evaluating these computer tools, the human-computer interaction with these tools. So that would be my research outcome.
Right.
But the policy outcome is to achieve achieve policy recommendations, and ideally, better informed policy recommendations.
Right.
Based on this data-driven process.
Okay. So, I'm just trying to work out the your stakeholder group. In their first workshop or series of workshops, using the example I described, what would you expect them to achieve in that? So they would develop a model or the questions or what they want to know, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it would be a good start to first come up with some common interest and shared goals, what they want out of this process. And I think next it's essential to get a common understanding of the most important drivers. So we started those workshops with identifying those drivers that were on issues that were most important for this community. To give an example, in Kimberley, the outcome of the first workshops were they're most interested, or the most pressing issues were forest fire, mountain pine beetle, and water concerns, everything about their watersheds.
And so you try and build a model that incorporates those things? Is that the plan?
Yes. With that outcome from the first workshops, we went back and worked on a mountain pine beetle susceptibility model. We did GIS analysis of the watersheds and collaborated with a climate researcher, Trevor Murdoch at PCAIC, about future precipitation changes and how that could influence the local hydrology and the watersheds. And the local fire chief provided us with a fire spread model that he already had built.
So, and that's the point where you then produce visualizations of the different scenarios?
Yes, it's a lot about translating, bringing different data sets together, I mean, I'm not an expert in these specific models myself, mm-hmm. so my job is more to communicate, to translate these different types of expert knowledge and make them accessible in the participation process.
So what are the options in terms of how you present the visualization? Is it all sort of 3D draped sort of forests that look like forests, or is there other options?
That's a good question, and that's also part of a key part of my research, what I need for my research outcome, so what I'm interested in my research. We tried many different visualization types, ranging from conventional 2D maps to interactive computer maps and these high-end 3D landscape visualizations. By now, I think the best approach is to combine different types of visualizations and different channels. We had a pretty good response to a combination of posters and Google Earth. Some people really liked Google Earth and were motivated through it. It helped the understanding. But my evaluation showed that there was a group of stakeholders that, in contrast, couldn't work or didn't want to work with such digital globes, and they were better off with the posters. And then there were also other people who liked the Google Earth, but they wanted the deeper information from the posters in addition to it. So yeah, that's one example how different media, different visualization types could be combined in such a workshop.
So when you produce an interactive visualization, do you get to the point where people can walk around the streets of Kimberley in 2050? Is that the kind of presentation that people get?
Yeah, although we even try to get beyond that. In my PhD thesis, I distinguish different types of interaction, and walking through a landscape or a city is just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That is a pretty good interaction to get people involved in the first place and get their attention. Although it didn't contribute that much to their further understanding. But then we have also interaction by traveling through time. Maybe you know this Google Earth time slider,
yes.
Where you
mm-hmm.
can, so seeing how the city might develop over the next 20 years, if you build up all these development plans, that was very powerful. Or the different layers, to go away from Google Earth, any participatory geographic information system, interactive maps, they work with different layers. And giving people the opportunity to combine different data layers often led to really astonishing results and new knowledge.
It must be easy for you to affect the outcome. You might have somewhere in your head that you don't want this particular development to happen, and you could produce a pretty impressive ugly factory.
Yes.
Or you could take a picture from far away across a nice lake and it'd be quite pretty. So how do you address the ethics of that? Is there an ethics of it?
Yes, definitely. Ethics is a big topic, I think. The leader of our collaborative group, Stephen Shepard, he wrote two papers about the ethics of visualization, and recently another paper about the ethics of Google Earth. Yes, sometimes these tools can even blur people's vision, maybe even unintentionally. Not necessarily manipulation, could even be unintentionally, because everything looks fancy if it's in 3D.
Yes.
But even if you don't intend it to, or sometimes these digital globes tend to overemphasize forest and human impact gets a bit less emphasis. You rarely see some human things you don't see really well in a digital globe. So, and of course there is the potential misuse or misleading use. So ethics is a big topic, and my approach to ethics is that I want to involve local stakeholder very early in the process, have them to understand where these visualizations come from, and by having an iterative process, giving them a chance to correct the images and to be more involved in making them. And I think that's
so if
one
they feel some, if they've got some ownership of not just the final outcome, but how you got there.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Ownership. Yeah, it's about ownership, control, input. So, yeah.
And so then you haven't worked this up with the entire community. Is there a stage of then taking those different models to the wider community?
I think that's case specific, but ideally, and we were lucky to reach this in the Kimberley project, we had an open house in the end with people from the general public coming in and seeing and discussing the outcomes from these working group meetings.
So we're coming to the end of the talk, which is unfortunate because I can keep talking about this for hours. I think it's absolutely fascinating. And as I think I've told you, it's remarkably close to my PhD, so it's seriously exciting that this work's still carrying on. So much has happened since I stopped working in this area, and you've done so many things that I wish that I could have done. What's left? What's the next challenges?
I think there are lots of challenges left. And what most studies have focused on were evaluations of these processes, and there is some evidence showing that these visualization tools, participation, all scenarios, all these tools and methods can facilitate people's understanding, can increase their awareness, and generally spoken, people like it. However, there are very few, almost no longitudinal evaluations of the real outcome on the ground. The question, the big open question is, did it really have an impact on the ground? Did it really change anything in the long term?
Mm-hmm.
And that's also where my current research is going, that I revisit some of these projects I just mentioned.
Yes.
And phone the local planner, phone the community representative, and do interviews with them, asking, did anything change? Were any of these recommendations finally implemented? Where are you now? And if not, why not? Or do you see your community getting anywhere near that?
But it's certainly a big step forward towards, I mean, all the issues of sustainability, the space, the time, the multiple perspectives, I could go on. But they're all coming together in this modelling approach. It seems a really sensible way to go. So this is something you're going to be working on for a while?
I hope so. And yeah, just maybe if I can add a little advertisement. UBC is currently building a new research facility, the Center for Interactive Research on Sustainability. Will be the greenest building in Northern America, a plus energy building, producing more energy than actually consuming. And this facility is planned to become a research hub for all these questions around computer tools, interactivity, interactive computer tools, and using them for sustainability issues, sustainability goals. And bringing together researchers from different disciplines, architects and environmental engineering and landscape planners, bringing them together, bringing local communities in, having such workshops, bringing policy makers, decision makers in. And
it's very exciting to hear that that's got to that level of engagement and funding. This is being recognised as being important. That's really exciting. All right, we'd better wind it up. It's about to get very noisy here. Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Dr. Olaf Schroed from the University of British Columbia. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Sustainable Lens on Radio.